And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. We're going to read our commentary now, like we do every week, and this one's entitled, Keep Logging Out of Roadless Areas and Preserve Roosevelt's Vision. And this is written by Edith Roosevelt Derby Williams, a special to the Seattle Times. Here goes, my grandfather, Republican President Theodore Roosevelt, is remembered as one of our nation's greatest conservationists for establishing 4 national parks and setting aside more than 100 million acres of national forest land for the public to enjoy. In his time, Americans' population was booming and the development was spreading unchecked across the American landscape. With that rapid growth came unrestrained natural resource extraction, which was even then taking its toll on American forests. Teddy Roosevelt understood that the strain on the environment from development would only increase in time, so he intervened and sought to create a balance before our entire natural heritage was lost. Since his presidency from 1901 to 1909, the U.S. population has almost tripled. Our country now has 275 million people, and that number is expected to double again in just 50 years. Wild open space and undeveloped landscapes in America are now scarcer than they have ever been. With each passing year, we have fewer and fewer of these large tracts of unbroken land, intact rivers, unsevered migratory routes, and quiet, undisturbed habitat. And while metals can be recycled and new energy resources discovered or invented, large expanses of wild land, clean water, and intact ecosystems cannot be created. Increasingly, as our last wild lands disappear, people crave the recreation and solitude these lands provide. In recognition of this, the U.S. Forest Service recently initiated a public process to permanently protect roadless areas, the last of such unbroken tracts in our national forests. If the final proposal fully protects those unspoiled areas, it would ensure that these national treasures would continue to provide some of the best hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities in the nation, as well as clean water, wildlife, and a legacy we can leave our children. Such a plan would strike a familiar chord with my grandfather. Unfortunately, though, our pristine forests still face 2 obstacles in the process before they can become permanently protected for future generations. First, the initial draft of the protection plan falls short. As it stands now, it would ban roads, but it would not ban industrial logging from these backcountry lands. You cannot protect forests by continuing to log them. To truly safeguard our roadless natural heritage, the final plan must offer protection from further commercial exploitation. Right now, under the process for implementing this policy, the American public has a chance to comment on the draft plan and its shortcomings. Now is the time for citizens to speak up and demand that roads and logging be banned from our remaining national forests. The second obstacle comes from a small group of timber mining and off-road vehicle interests who believe that any limit on private use of public lands is detrimental to their self-interest. They are now trying to mislead the hunter, angler, and other recreational users of the forest, arguing that preserving America's last fragments of unbroken forest will somehow limit access to these areas. It is of nonsense, of course. Hunting and fishing takes place in all our national forests and will continue to do so. Further, it is precisely the roadless nature of these forests that makes them so valuable for the American sportsman. They offer solitude, undisturbed landscapes, and room to roam that you cannot find anywhere else in America. Leaving these roadless areas will not limit access to the lands that we all enjoy. On the contrary, it will ensure that we can enjoy them in their wild state for generations to come. 100 years ago, Teddy Roosevelt looked ahead and created a legacy that we all enjoy today. He recognized that the future of America's outdoors does not lie with those who seek to exploit public lands for private profit. That was true in Teddy Roosevelt's time, and it is true today. It is in America's best interest to support the Forest Service's roadless initiative and also call for an end to logging on our roadless lands. We should follow my grandfather's footsteps and leave a comparable legacy for our children and grandchildren, just as he did for all of us. Edith Roosevelt Derby Williams, a Republican, is the granddaughter of Theodore Roosevelt, the 25th President of the United States. She is a longtime resident of Washington State and a member of the Washington Wilderness Coalition. She resides on Vashon Island, and we thank the Seattle Times Company for this commentary. A little anthropocentric for my view, but anyway, heart's in the right place, right? Let's get back into news here. In activist news, Frank Trinkle, a Sea Shepherd activist jailed by the Faroese Island police during a July 10th demonstration, arrived in Amsterdam a few days ago after electing not to complete the expulsion order of the Faroes' home rule government. Trinkle and two other crew members of the Sea Shepherd conservation vessel Ocean Warrior were arrested when they stepped from an inflatable raft onto the dock at Tórshavn, capital of the Faroe Islands. All had received a formal refusal of entry from the Faroese on the grounds that they might commit a crime if allowed into the country. A former Green Beret medic and helicopter pilot, Trinkle was ordered deported to the United States via Copenhagen and Germany, but switched planes in Copenhagen and flew instead to Amsterdam, where he held a press conference. In Tórshavn, I got word that pilot whales have been seen gathering a few miles off the Faroe Islands, said Trinkle. The grind hunts are expected to begin within a week, and in fact, I believe 36 whales have already been killed. Paul Watson goes on to say, we would like to acknowledge the people of Denmark, Sweden, and Norway for their tremendous support. They have been largely ignoring the bias of their national media and are letting us know that they consider the drive hunts barbaric and want them to stop. One woman from Norway told us she canceled her subscription to her local newspaper when they called us criminals, and she is now donating her subscription fees to us, Ocean Warrior Captain Paul Watson, Sea Shepherd International Society. P.O. Box 2616, Friday Harbor, Washington, 98250. Once again, that's Sea Shepherd Society International. P.O. Box 2616, Friday Harbor, Washington, 98250. And, of course, you can visit their webpage at www.seashepherd.org. And four Greenpeace activists chained themselves to the masts of a ship in Portugal to protest against a cargo of timber from an endangered African rainforest, the International Environmental Watchdog Group said. Greenpeace forest campaigner Tim Birch said the cargo came from Cameroon, Africa, where illegal logging was widespread and threatened to destroy one of the world's last remaining pristine rainforests. All the timber on this vessel has come from wanton destruction of the Cameroon rainforest. We want the Portuguese government to take action to prevent these imports, Birch told Reuters. Globally, we now have 20% of ancient forests left around the planet. Time is running out to save these forests, he said. He was speaking in the port of Lixos, about 210 miles north of Lisbon, where the protest was staged. Portuguese Prime Minister Antonio Guterres promised an investigation into whether the shipment contained illegally cut wood. Quote, if illegality were to exist, I think there should not be any complacency on our part towards this illegality. If this is true, I will ask the appropriate authorities to verify whether this is true, Guterres told journalists. Birch said the activists chained to the mast of the Cypriot registered Aegis were prepared to remain there for days while the vessel traveled to other ports of call in the Netherlands and Germany. Quote, they're very, very experienced climbers, and they've done this regularly. They know what's involved, and they're very committed, Birch added. Activists boarded the Aegis late last Monday as it was about to check into dock at Lixos, unfurled a banner saying, Stop African Rainforest Crime, and renamed the vessel by painting African Forest Crime on its port side, he said. Another three activists from Greenpeace and the Portuguese environmental group Quercus chained themselves to a movable bridge at the entry to Lixos Harbor but were arrested and due to face charges. And in an 11th-hour assist from Hollywood activists James Garner, singers Bonnie Raitt and Don Henley, two environmental groups posted a $250,000 bond yesterday required to block logging on a tract of unprotected redwoods in the Headwaters Forest near Eureka, California. A judge had given the Sierra Club and the Environmental Protection Information Center until this Wednesday to come up with the money intended to offset income losses that may be suffered by the company that had sought to log about half the 1,000-acre tract. After a frantic scramble, the groups managed to secure large donations from actor James Garner and singers Bonnie Raitt and Don Henley. Henley donated profits from a Tuesday night concert in the San Francisco Bay Area. It was incredibly generous, said Alyssa Rosen, a Sierra Club senior regional representative. She noted that Henley's contribution represented about half the total needed to post the bond. Anyway, you look at it, there's a worrisome precedent being set here, Rosen said. It's of great concern. And we want to thank Eric Bailey of the LA Times for this story. Let's move to animal news. Do you wish to see the grizzly bear hunt in British Columbia banned once and for all? If the answer is yes, please listen. HOPE GEO, Heal Our Planet Global Environmental Organization, announces the launching of a new referendum initiative campaign to ban the hunting of grizzly bears in British Columbia. Obviously, this is a major undertaking requiring substantial funding and large-scale volunteer participation, whether or not Whether or not you are in British Columbia, your help is needed to help us help those who cannot help themselves. The Bears recognize no political boundaries. If you'd like to help, contact Anthony Marr, Heal Our Planet Earth, Global Environmental Organization, Heal Hope Geo, 4118 West 11th Avenue, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the zip up there, V6R2L6. Once again, Anthony Marr, Hope Geo, 4118 West 11th Avenue, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, V6R2L6. Or you can give them a call at 604-222-1169. That's 604-222-1169. Or, of course, Anthony_Marr, that's M-A-R-R, at hope-geo.org. And, of course, their webpage, www.hope-geo.org. And the desert lands of Southern California are home not only to spectacular parks, preserves, and scenic landscapes, they are also home to several major military installations. Training exercises of various types have from time to time conflicted with public enjoyment of the desert environment, and one of those conflicts has just ended. The United States Navy and the National Park Service have just completed an environmental assessment of a proposed change in the path of a low-altitude flight training route over Joshua Tree National Park. The current route passes over the northwestern and central portions of the park, including 7 of the 9 campgrounds and 6 of the 8 picnic areas. Jets flying 200 feet above the ground also pass over much of Joshua Tree's wilderness areas and are disruptive to wildlife and other natural resources. After much study, the Navy and the National Park Service have agreed to a modification in the flight path that should significantly ease the problems while still meeting the Navy's training needs. A path has been identified that moves the jets away from areas of human activity and avoids wilderness as much as possible. According to the official, quote, finding of no significant impact, the new location of the corridor overlies less federally designated wilderness, fewer desert tortoise populations, fewer nesting raptors, less desert bighorn sheep habitat, and fewer historic structures than the current path. And I'd like to say thank the National Park Conservation Association for that news. And shocking treatment of Montana wolves. The federal wildlife officials in Montana are preparing to implement shock therapy for wolves. After killing off most of the wolves in the Sheep Mountain Wolf Pack, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service plans to shock the pack's remaining survivors into submission. U.S. Fish and Wildlife officials have trapped the remaining 4 wolves and placed them in a pen on Ted Turner's Flying D Ranch in Montana for a series of experimental shock treatments. Researchers hope to nullify the wolves' natural predatory behavior in order to keep them away from the hordes of livestock which flood their natural range. Scheduled for mid-July through October, the experiments will deliver an electrical shock to the confined wolves every time they approach a penned calf. This experiment is just the latest machination of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Service Agency's War on Wildlife, waged in the name of a handful of livestock interests who refuse to accept the cost of doing business in the wild country, whose natural balance has been restored through the reintroduction of this crucial predator, the wolf. What can you do? Contact the following individuals and demand they stop their cruel control tactics. Ed Bangs, what a name, Ed Bangs, Wolf Recovery Coordinator, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, 100 North Park Avenue, Suite 320, Helena, Montana, 59601. Once again, Ed Bangs, Wolf Recovery Coordinator, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, 100 North Park Avenue, Suite 320, Helena, Montana, 59601. Or, of course, Ed_Bangs, B-A-N-G-S, at fws.gov. Make the following points. You resent being forced to fund the government's reintroduction of the endangered wolf, only to have them later be killed and harassed. Wild animals should not be physically and psychologically traumatized when livestock ranchers refuse to adopt reasonable measures such as night penning guard animals, carcass removal, and fencing. Even if the cruel experiment succeeds in conditioning these 4 wolves, it will have little applicability in wolf management, especially as wolf populations increase and expand their range. If ranchers insist on grazing animals in remote high predator areas, then they must bear the burden of their folly and not force taxpayers to subsidize their lethal revenge tactics. And number 5, although shock therapy is non-lethal, it is still unacceptably cruel and should be used only as a last resort if non-lethal methods fail to adequately reduce livestock losses. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed to designate critical habitat for the piping plover, an imperiled shorebird that inhabits the shorelines of the Great Lakes, southeastern states, and Gulf of Mexico. The proposal includes about 189 miles of Great Lakes shoreline. This includes areas that support or have the potential to support open, sparsely vegetated sandy habitats such as sand spits or sand beaches associated with wide unforested systems of dunes and interdune wetlands and the plover's prey species. Within these areas, specific habitat features needed by the piping plover include patches of vegetation, cobbled debris such as driftwood, and other forms of protective cover for nests and chicks. In the wintering areas, critical habitat is being proposed along 1,672 miles of coastline in North and South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas. These include coastal areas with intertidal beaches and flats and associated dune systems and flats above annual high tide. Intertidal sites offer foraging and roosting sites, while areas above high tide provide refuge from high winds and cold weather. It is possible that some federally owned beaches in the Great Lakes will be temporarily closed during the springtime in order to determine which areas may be utilized for nesting, said Bill Hartwig, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Regional Director. There are three populations of piping plovers in the U.S. The most endangered is the Great Lakes breeding population, which includes just 32 breeding pairs. The northern Great Plains and the Atlantic coast populations are classified as threatened. All piping plovers winter along the southeast and Gulf Coast and are classified as threatened in their wintering habitat. And not to mention that sea otters are disappearing across the central Aleutian Islands. Sea otter population in the Aleutian Islands has declined 70% since 1992 and 95% or more throughout much of the archipelago since the 1980s. An estimated 6,000 sea otters remain in the Aleutian Islands today, a spring 2000 survey by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has confirmed. In the Aleutian Islands, which form the boundary between the Bering Sea and the North Pacific Ocean, two small sea otter populations are known to have survived the commercial harvest for fur and began to grow and reoccupy their former range. The first systematic aerial surveys of sea otters in the Aleutian Islands were conducted by the service during the 1959 through 1965 era. Otters were thriving, and the greatest concentration in the world was located in the central Aleutian Islands. In the 1980s, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game estimated there were from 55 to 100,000 sea otters in the Aleutians. The entire archipelago was surveyed by aircraft in 1992, and during those 27 years, otter populations grew and the range expanded to include the eastern and westernmost islands, which had contained few sea otters in the early 1960s. But in the central Aleutians, the sea otter counts of several islands declined by up to 90% due to increased adult mortality, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife researchers report. A recent increase in interactions between sea otters and killer whales indicates predation may be the leading cause of otter deaths rather than native subsistence harvest. The service will be expanding survey efforts to include Alaskan Peninsula and Kodiak Archipelago, and has joined the World Wildlife Fund in supporting surveys of the Commander Islands in Russia to determine the geographic extent of the decline. A final report on the Aleutian aerial survey results will be available this fall. A federal judge in Hawaii has ordered the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt to designate critical habitat for a native forest bird by October 31, 2001. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had sought a delay in habitat designation for the Oahu Ilapayo until October of 2004. In a lawsuit brought by the Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund on behalf of the Conservation Council for Hawaii, Judge Helen Gilmore of the Federal District Court in Honolulu found that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had no credible reason for wanting the delay. Quote, "We're pleased to learn that the court recognized the need to hold the service's feet on the fire on this one," said Earth Justice Attorney David Henkin. "We don't have many native forest birds left on Oahu, and we need to protect the Ilapayo's critical habitat if we want to have a fighting chance to save this one. Sightings of the Oahu Ilapayo, once abundant in forested areas throughout Oahu, have plummeted in recent years, and estimated 1,500 birds remain in the wild, occupying about 4% of the species' historic range. Habitat destruction poses one of the primary threats to the Ilapayo's survival and recovery, with highway projects and military activities disrupting remaining habitats." And a disputed mine proposal in northwestern British Columbia is in doubt following a British Columbia Supreme Court judge's decision to quash provincial government approval. The gold, silver, and copper mine is proposed for a site on the Taku River, the largest salmon-producing river in southeastern Alaska. The provincial government failed to take into account the views of the Tlingit First Nation indigenous people when it approved Red Fern Resources' Taku River mine proposal in March of 1998, the British Supreme Court Justice Pamela Kirkpatrick said Wednesday. Chandler said it was important to note the court had not found an insignificant assessment of environmental issues. Quote, the decision rests on the finding that issues relating to cultural and other impacts specific to the Tlingits were not adequately addressed in the material that was provided to the minister as the basis for their decision. The Taku watershed is an 18,000 square kilometer, that's about 4.5 million acres, of unroded land in northwestern British Columbia. It contains habitats representing 5 biogeoclimatic zones ranging from high plateaus to lush coastal temperate rainforest, and supports the richest wildlife habitat on the west coast of North America. Grizzly, moose, caribou, black bear, mountain goat, salmon, and migratory birds thrive in large numbers due to the area's isolation and the fact that it is only accessible by float, plane, riverboat, or on foot. And unfortunately, that's about all the time that we have right now for news on Earth First Radio. If you'd like to get your news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, please send us email at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you can send snail mail to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Please, please, please send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance of the event. Thank you. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that address, Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And you can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer. We're on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need to play the MP3 files is free on the website. We're also live streaming MP3 audio at www.microradio.net/FRSC. Once again, www.microradio.net/FRSC. And Earth First Radio is being carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations around the world. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio and look for us at Palm Radio on the web. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. We'll be back next week with another hour-long program. But right now we're going to listen to a little music off the Walkin' Jim Stoltz Vision album. This one's called Thinkin' Like a Mountain.
Thunder rolling on the mountain heights, I hear it calling my name. Once you follow that storm cloud's flight, you won't ever be the same. Redtail flying overhead, she knows exactly where to go. I ask the river, question the sun, only the mountain knows. This life is so rich I can taste it, and I give in my heart to the wind. And when that rain falls down and the sun rolls round, I'll be thinking like a mountain once again. Thank you. mountains whisper tells it all. The canyon takes it in. The trees will sing air until they fall. Then they begin again. This life is so rich I can taste it, and I give in my heart to the wind. And when that rain falls down and the sun rolls round, I'll be thinking like a mountain once again. Ain't no rhyme to this reason. Key to all is a changing season. Takes us in and gives us back. Written there in them fading tracks. This life is so rich I can taste it, and I give in my heart to the wind. And when that rain falls down and the sun rolls round, I'll be thinking like a mountain once again. And when that rain falls down and the sun rolls round, I'll be thinking like a mountain once again. Thinking like a mountain once again. Thinking like a mountain once again. Thinking like a mountain, thinking like a mountain, thinking like a mountain once again. This life is so rich I can taste it, and I give in my heart to the wind.
And Uncle Dennis, I'd like to remind all the listeners of Earth First Radio to... If you're on the west coast of California, come on out to Santa Cruz for the Western Regional Rendezvous on the weekend of August 4th, 5th, and 6th, right here in Santa Cruz, California. We'll be focusing on genetic engineering issues. Give us a call at area code 831-425-3205 for more information. That's 831-425-3205 for information about the Western Regional Rendezvous, August 4th, 5th, and 6th here in Santa Cruz, California. Or you can email us at cruzief@cruzio.com. And that's it for Earth First Radio.